Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
This is part two of our TV theme tune specials. If you haven't listened to part one, in part one, we did crime shows of basically the 60s and the 70s. We are now moving into the 80s. We have started the show with Magnum.
That's right. Magnum PI was on the air from 1980 to 1988. Nicely starting off our transition. You know, we talked last time up through the 70s. And interestingly enough, I think all the shows we did before basically ended before 1980. I think Chips might have rolled over slightly, but most of the shows, sorry, checking my notes.
Where'd you check your notes?
Chips did run to 83, but most of the other shows, like they all, it was notable that most of the shows seemed to run up to the 80s and there was a gap and then new shows seemed to take over, at least in terms of the ones that stand out in our consciousness.
To talk about that for a little moment, I remember in the last show we talked at length about Hawaii 5-0. I think both of us, at least I know for myself, we had put Hawaii 5-0 down as a leader in the clubhouse. If you are listening to these shows, my partner and I are going to attempt to define for you.
That's true. We should explain what we're doing for anybody who missed the first half.
Yeah, we're gonna define for you the definitive TV theme show, TV crime show theme from a crime / cop show.
Yep.
So in a very long-winded way, I remember in the last show we talked about Hawaii 5-0, mm-hmm. and you had said that Hawaii 5-0, a CBS TV production, had filmed, then it had stopped filming.
Right up to 1980, it stopped.
And then CBS
That's right.
Began work on Magnum,
I guess. They had to, or at least whatever the production company that was, I'm sure, affiliated with CBS, they said, what are we going to give all these people to do here in Hawaii? Hey, here's a new show for you, and they picked up right up with Magnum P.I.
So Magnum P.I., the theme tune was done by a Mike Post. I can't remember if you mentioned his name in the last episode, but that is a name that's now going to keep popping up during the 80s and 90s in terms of a composer of TV themes.
Yeah, definitely. He recurs through these who's our other main one that's going to recur through all these things or has already? Now I've already forgotten who it was.
I think the interesting thing about Magnum, the theme, it does seem to all of a sudden be a little jauntier.
It's the 80s, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Like
yeah.
That. You know, it is it's sort of rock and roll. It feels more like a TV theme, which yes. I'm sure it's sort of circular logic. Like I think of TV themes as the ones I heard in the 80s. So when you hear older ones, you go, oh, that's not like a TV theme. But it does seem to have transitioned to a modern TV theme. I think it makes it less likely that you'd like listen to it as a song, whereas some of the other things we've listened to so far, you'd say, oh, that's a song. If that came on the radio, it's not gonna be my favorite song, but I could see listening to it.
I think that's true.
I'm not sure I can see listening to the Magnum PI theme on the radio.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you make. Although if you are interested in listening to all the themes, we have them posted on our YouTube channel. So I think if you go to YouTube and search for Atlantic Voice or The Atlantic Voice, you can check out a playlist that we've put up there called TV Themes.
That's
and you
right.
can listen to all of these.
The Atlantic Voice channel, and then there's a couple of playlists. I think there's an old playlist from maybe World Cup songs on there that from one of our old episodes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There's a playlist up there, and I can tell already people have started listening to it because, of course, they've listened to the first episode. I was concerned because we put all the songs there, and it was going to be spoilers. So if you listen to it after listening to our last episode, you actually know pretty much all the shows we're going to talk about now, but you know.
Yeah, but you haven't had us explain them to you.
No, yes. but part of the fun has been you play it without saying what it is, because I know if I'm at home, I'm thinking, do I know that thing right away? You know, like if I just announce what the show is and then I played the music, it wouldn't be very interesting. But playing the music, and it's a little bit of a guessing game, I'm sure, is going on out there.
So, of course, Magnum starring Tom Selleck, the man who could have been Indiana
starring
Jones.
Starring, it's the full name of the character is
Thomas.
Again, I was Thomas
Magnum?
And I can't read the middle name. Thomas Sullivan Magnum, I think, the fourth. okay. was his full name. Of course, he stayed at, he was a, I think he was a former military person.
He was a Navy guy. Right. He's yeah. always in a uniform, a white uniform. And definitely during the credits, he wears a white uniform.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Right. Yeah. So he's a Navy guy. And he, now he's become a private investigator. He stays at this big house, which is not really his. He stays in the guest house at a big piece of property, which I, if I recall correctly, and some like author who we never really see.
And he hangs out with that British dude.
Yeah.
Who in fact in real life is not from Britain. That actor is actually from Texas.
Is that right?
I never knew that. Pretty good. He's pulled it off. Yeah, he's
from. Did you have the show in Britain?
In Britain. It used to play on a Sunday afternoon, and I used to watch it. And again, when you are younger, I think I said this on the last show, I'm attracted to TV shows because of their theme tunes and credits. And I'd never seen Magnum before. I didn't know who Tom Selleck was because he wasn't a international star back in the early 80s.
Yeah, well, that's pretty early. I mean, this is the beginning of him becoming a star, too. So it's, you know, before 3 Men and a Baby and those kind of shows.
Exactly. Movies. So there was this funky music, and I'm like, yeah, I'll give this show a go. And he works for a British guy. And so I felt some affiliation with the show. But then later on in life, when I discovered that the guy was from Texas, I lost all interest in Magnum completely.
Well, there's a couple other things about it. So that I mentioned the house there. There was a rumor I just was reading about when I was doing the research on this that the Obamas bought the house.
Oh, the Magnum house.
But I don't know if that's really true. It's like, you know, where they would go in their retirement years or whatever you do after your, while he's not, I assume he'll be going around doing speeches and making millions.
Yeah, I can't imagine he's going to become a private detective.
Another 5-0, Hawaii 5-0 connection. Apparently, in the first couple episodes, there were references to the Hawaii 5-0 unit.
Oh, really?
As if, you know, like there's some plot continuity with it. The other big thing, you know, we mentioned him being a big star, and you know well how big a star he could have been.
Did he turn it down? I can't remember if he turned it down or he couldn't get out of TV filming.
Yeah, I don't know if he like formally turned it down, but he was certainly in the discussion to be Indiana Jones.
To be Indiana Jones.
In Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And he was doing the TV, and I don't know whether it was like he formally said no or just he really couldn't continue on with the audition process or what it was. Apparently, towards the end of this, I don't remember this episode, but towards the end of the run, they did an episode called something like Raiders of the Lost Art. Or something like that. That was all like an homage to the fact that he didn't get the Raiders of the Lost Ark role.
That's interesting.
I'm sure he did all right for himself nonetheless, but you know, he's not Harrison Ford star level.
And Harrison Ford was a star. I don't know. See,
he'd already been in Star Wars. You got to say he was a star at that point. Mega star.
But let me ask you a question, though. Domestically in the United States, was Harrison... Because when I listen to that tidbit now, I'm sitting here thinking, why on earth would a TV guy, because that was all Tom Selleck had been, why would he be even considered in front of
somebody who's already been in the movies?
But perhaps Harrison Ford wasn't a megastar. It's not like, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm picking this guy from TV to play in front of Paul Newman. Do you know what I mean? I
don't know.
Interesting. So it's Magnum P.I. Pretty good tune, though.
One of the reasons we picked that, in part because it has a jaunty intro. The next one we're going to pick is actually thought about starting with this because it started about the same time and it's a little different. We're gonna go in a couple of circles here for a moment, but let me pull up the next one here. Boy, I hope we got the right one I meant to touch. No, wait. That's not the one I want to start with.
Okay.
So that's sort of the clean version, which is now spoiled it for everybody. But what we really needed was this one. Dispatch, we have 9/11. I'm Robin Price. See surplus store corner, People's Drive, 124th Street. So the audio is worse on that one than the thing I briefly played there, but that's...
But I do want to talk about that in a moment once we've talked a little bit about the show, about the second version.
Yep. So Hill Street Blues. So this came out in 1981, ran to 1987. One of the reasons I thought when we were organizing everything, we've been trying to come up with themes and groupings and, you know, narrative arc and the like. And Hill Street Blues is like a sort of an outlier for the shows, at least. And I think the music a little bit. I mean, listen to that. That's not going to sound like a typical TV theme.
No.
But, you know, it is a different type of show than all these other ones we're talking about. And we're going to come back and we're going to start talking about 80 shows. And there's going to be more that have more in common with Magnum P.I. Hill Street Blues is an ensemble cast, drama with a little bit of comedy kind of thing, has a plot continuity in that, like, the characters develop over time and change and people come and go. I think we could really do, or at least I could, like an hour on Hill Street Blues.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I couldn't because I didn't watch the show.
Yeah.
My dear old mom, bless her, watched the show religiously. Maybe we could sit her here and she could do a whole hour.
Well, I used to watch a show with my mother, and so apparently you weren't as good a son.
We could have the Atlantic Voice with Eric and Zeph's mom. Yeah. I'm going to correct you, and I very rarely do that. You used the word outlier for Hill Street Blues, and you are correct in the extent that in 80s TV, that type of show.
If you're going to correct me and then you say I'm correct, it's, you know, doesn't quite.
Oh, don't worry, I'm going to make my point moment. Yeah. It is an outlier for 80s TV shows, but in a strange way, Hill Street Blues is ahead of its time in that that style of TV show is a forerunner for shows that come in the late 80s and even through to now, this notion of ensemble casts, serial plot lines, minor plot lines. I mean, Hill Street Blues is the first of the L.A. Law, Saint Elsewhere, ER, NYPD Blue, and I'm sure there are shows on TV now. Even a show like that we're going to come to later, I know we're going to come to The Sopranos later, it's an outlier then, but it's ahead of its time because now all TV almost is that way.
Yeah, I mean, especially like, I mean, you can certainly see the seeds of the HBO series in this and the way it was treating a topic, in some more in-depth level to some extent. I mean, not all of it. When you go back and watch it now, some parts hold up, but like parts that were designed to be sort of gritty and real, look a little bit goofy in retrospect. The guy, I forget the name of the character who played like the deep undercover guy who was kind of grimy and stuff. He seems a little bit too comedic in retrospect, but at the time it seemed like a big deal. Did you say Stephen Bochco?
I think this is one of Stephen Bochco's first shows.
Right. So, he also did L.A. Law, NYPD Blue, Doogie Howser, a little bit different.
Oh, that's right.
And Cop Rock, which was a musical. That was a
cop music show.
Yeah.
Like, and that completely bombed.
That did not work out as well.
I take it that you liked Hill Street Blues.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I liked that sort
of TV.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably more, we've used the word, and we used it a lot in the last show about TV cop shows. We've used the word gritty quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe a word to be used is it's a far more realistic.
Well, I always get worried about realistic because who's realistic or not.
Okay.
But it's got the offices that they're in don't look overly polished. I mean, it's the opposite. I mean, part of it could be the setting, but it's the opposite of Chips. Like Chips was like, everything was like bright and shiny. Like, of course, that was set in California. Hill Street Blues never said where it was.
It was unspecified East Coast town.
Almost seemed East City. Coast or maybe like a upper Midwest, like a Detroit or Chicago or something like that.
I always think of it as a Philadelphia or Boston. Maybe because in those opening credits, it's rainy and sort of snowy. And
so now that I think about it, what's interesting about it is if you did that now, you'd have to set it. So nobody would accept a nondescript city because they want to hear the accents of wherever it is and the like. And this was not, it was still a TV show, I guess, at that level is the point where it's not quite doing everything. David Caruso, speaking of NYPD Blue, had a role on it as the leader of the Irish gang.
I remember so did Dennis Franz.
Yeah,
he was true. Bunce.
He didn't start initially, but then he came in later on. Bunce?
No, he paid a guy called Bunce, and then Bochco spanned him off into his own show where he moved him to California called Beverly Hills Bunce. That thing lasted about 12 episodes.
So Sipowicz is the guy.
Sipowicz is the guy from NYPD Blue, which Stephen Bochco then basically builds his series around in the early 90s.
Oh, right. Okay.
But it's Dennis Franz, the actor.
That was really, really commu- This is Michael Post's song.
Mike Post's song.
And you were going to talk about the version I inadvertently played at the very beginning there.
Was the version that was, I know, in the UK.
I have a feeling Zeph was thinking he was going to edit that out, but now I've talked about it too much, so he can't edit it out.
The first version that my partner played was the version that charted, because this was a song I remember back in the UK.
They didn't keep the voiceover in that one.
No, it was just they just played the song, but it was a big hit even in the UK charts. And again, Hill Street Blues, when I grew up in England back in the 70s and 80s, TV programming was full of American TV shows. So, you know, all the shows that we've talked about were shows that I was able to watch as a kid in the UK during our prime time. Even Hill Street Blues, though, for some reason, I think because it was different than all the other shows coming out of the States at the time, it tended to get stuck on a lesser channel at a later time of night because it wasn't regarded as easily accessible in the way that Magnum was easily accessible. That being said, the theme tune was released as a single, mm-hmm. and it charted high in the UK. And the first version that you played there, that little snippet, that's obviously the cleaned up
version. I think it seemed a little slower to me or something like that, too. But
was it a big hit here in the States?
You know, I don't have here whether it made it to any particular point in the rankings. I do remember hearing it on the radio. But I have a hard time picturing it now, like just the idea that that song just being on the radio.
Yeah.
It's got no words.
Yeah,
I mean, no one to listen to that. So, like I mentioned, that's a little bit of an outlier in that the other shows we're going to talk about, I think, have more in common with each other, for the 80s, that is, at least. And let's talk about the next one now, which, I don't want to give anything away. Get us at least to that sort of shift over.
You like this one, don't you?
Well, I mean, so I Simon like and Simon,
yeah.
From 81 to 89, I believe, or at least for a big good stint of its run, it was on immediately after Magnum PI. So it was like a back-to-back private
same channel
show. Yeah,
really interesting bit of TV programming.
A little segue to it. When I was a kid, I love that theme was so rocking out in my perspective that I placed my tape recorder right in front of the speaker, you know, because I couldn't just plug the TV into something to record at that point, like now, or couldn't go download it. But I recorded it on there, and so I had my own recording of the theme to Simon and Simon.
YouTube is great. It has now meant that you're not going to have to do that sort of thing with your putting it together DIY home technology. Mm-hmm. I take it you're a big Huey Lewis in the News fan.
No,
because that's exactly the sort of music.
Well, realize
you know,
I
TV
was
version
yes,
of that.
But I was. Between, depending upon what year I might have done this, I was either 12 to 16 years old. So, I might have listened to Huey Lewis at that point if that was the time, but doesn't make me a big, I'm not a big fan. I don't have that on my soundtrack now, you know, my Spotify playlist, if it's available.
Let me ask you a question then. Let me put you on the spot with the Simon and Simon theme. You loved it when you were younger. Mm-hmm. I listen to it now because I haven't heard it for a while. I play it and I go, yeah, it's kind of jaunty. I'll listen to that. Do you still like it now? Or are you going,
it's dated.
Are you embarrassed liking it?
No. I'm not embarrassed. Like, I mean, it had this guitar thing going on. When Beat It came out with Michael Jackson and had like a guitar part, that seemed like a rock and roll song at the time. Wait, Beat It?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I think. Yeah. Had all that. So, unfortunately, once again, I can't read my handwriting. Barry DeVere is something or other. It's the guy who did SWAT.
Oh, really?
And he also did the song In the City by the Eagles.
Oh, I don't know.
In the City.
Yeah, definitely haven't heard that.
I'm sure you have, but just not quite like that.
But it
features a bottle slide guitar. So that's the guitar with a little glass slide going on there.
It is that. It's sort of, and you know, and I just actually said, oh, you're a big Huey Lewis in the News fan. But you talk about the Eagles. It is that sort of music rather than, and if you go back to part one, we threw the words jazz influenced around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we talked about Mission Impossible, when we talked about Streets of San Francisco, it was so-and-so's a jazz composer. And yeah, you can, the Starsky and Hutch theme that we played in part one, yeah, it's a big jazz bands play that as sort of a staple. It is interesting now in the 80s that the same music composer is doing stuff with the Eagles. Or do you know what I mean? It's interesting how the music has changed. It's no longer jazzy. It's this sort of M.O.R., A.O.R. rock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I guess that makes sense. I mean, you know, just figure that TV is always lagging. Like you mentioned, it's inspired by the movie. So it's always a little behind in terms of cutting edge art, or reflection of cutting edge art. And never cutting edge, but like I want to say on the front of the trend. It's not cutting edge, like as in it's edgy, but it's in the front of the trend. So think about, you know, shows that would in the 60s or 70s be picking up jazz or funk themes. They're slightly behind because at that point on the radio, you're listening to the album-oriented rock kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so now by the early 80s, now they're picking up the album-oriented rock and the like. So, I mean, that's about it for Simon.
Who do we have next?
So we had, it was a sort of a fun show. It has a fun intro. You know, we were going to talk about credits as well. Lots of quick snippets of little comedic moments that, you know, like physical comedy and the like. There's something online, like a shot-for-shot remake of that done by Adam McKay and some of the other, like, Funny or Die type characters.
Really?
It's like the greatest night in television. There's some weird thing where they redid a bunch of 70s intros. You know,
and Tim Reed, the African American detective whose name on the show was Downtown Brown, if I remember correctly,
before Venus Flytrap.
Exactly, he was WKRP in Cincinnati.
I actually served him at a restaurant when I was a busboy at a restaurant in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Did you call him Mr. Flytrap or did you call him Mr. Downtown?
No, he was sitting at the he was at a table with the then governor of Virginia, Doug Wilder.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Are they,
and Patricia Kluge, who's a big name in Charlottesville.
Is it Kluge or Kluge?
No, it's Kluge.
Oh, okay.
She was married to the guy who...
Did you get his autograph?
She was married to the guy from Britain who did Metro Media Communications or whatever.
I don't know.
It's not Rupert Murdoch. It's another guy.
I'm podcasting in the basement.
Well, I guess his name is Kluge now that I think about it.
Did you get his autograph?
No.
Did you talk to him in any which way about, oh, I really enjoyed your show?
If you wanted the cornbread or the hard roll.
That's still an interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next on our list is
maybe you should let him know that we're talking about him in the show.
Well, I'll tweet him. This electronic version better than the chip stuff that you complained about last episode?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you why in a moment. If you don't, that's Knight Rider.
That's right.
Knight Rider with David Hasselhoff.
And Kit, the car, K-I-T-T, the Knight Industries 2000, which I think is kind of a cheap, like, if you make an acronym that's using letters,
okay,
but the last part is just a number, that's sort of cheating. Like, you know, we would not normally, like, so Knight Industries 2000, you're using all the T's to make the, normally that would say KI 2000. Like, we don't really normally take numbers and turn them into an acronym.
If you have not listened to part one of this, please listen to part one, because Eric has a acronym hang up on that show.
That's true.
Was now,
also chips related.
You've just played the tune, but that wasn't the credits. Because I seem to remember that when you watched Knight Rider...
Sure, it was the credits.
No, but it had a voiceover.
Oh.
Wasn't that the voice would go, Michael Knight, fighting for justice.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question.
Working for a secret government. It was one of those shows...
If you look at the link that we have on YouTube, it's some sort of Russian site, so maybe they took the words out because they wouldn't understand them.
I score a hardcore knight, wish for justice.
Is that like Alien? Or that sounds like Greedo from Star Wars.
Oh, it's Russian. It's Russian. It's great. Knight Rider. I mean, that's how they do it. It's
Russian plus a serving of spit.
I don't mind the Knight Rider. Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Knight Rider theme is classic. But you know something? It's gone full on electro syntho, you know, kind of cheesy Depeche Mode ripoff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very deep ripoff.
Actually,
I think it says that the music was by Glenn Larson and Steve Phillips, and Glenn Larson was actually the producer who did the show, and he also did Battlestar Galactica, which we'll come back to in a second.
I am playing right now Busta Rhymes.
Yes.
Who is sampling. He is sampling the Knight Rider theme. Mm-hmm. That's from the Busta Rhymes rap classic, Fire It Up.
Do you have that on your mixtape?
No. I have Pastor Courvoisier. That's a better Busta Rhymes song.
Oh, all right, then. I'll take your word for that.
But there you go. Knight Rider sampled by rap stars.
Yeah. So Battlestar, the tie into Battlestar Galactic, in addition to the producer, is the fact that, if you know Battlestar Galactic, at least the original version, I guess the new one too, had the little red light that went back and forth.
Oh, on the Cylons, yes.
Right, on the Cylons. And in this, Kit, the car, which was a black Pontiac Firebird in all its plastic glory, had a little red light that went back and forth. Because we should mention,
when he spoke, people the light seen
it,
went.
Kit was not just a car.
He's a talking
car. Artificial intelligence, just like we've warned everybody against.
Did he have a British accent? I can't remember now.
No.
Or was it one of those sort of generic mid-Atlantic accents? It's like me sometimes.
I don't think he had an accent. So Kit would talk. And I remember that the little light on the dashboard changed over the seasons. Like, I forget which was first, but one version was just basically a red light that would blink with his voice. And another one had like
it was the LED indicators that went up and down.
Levels kind of thing.
Well, I think it was the same parts left over from Battlestar Galactica. They put the little red light. They took it out of the space robots on Battlestar Galactica and stuck it in the front.
I mean, listen, it can't be any coincidence that little red lights bouncing back and forth recur in his various shows. Did I mention that's from 82 to 86? So not really that long a run altogether, but...
No, but it was a show that was rebooted by NBC. Do you remember that? About 5 or 6 years ago. And the voice of Kit was turned. Kit suddenly came back as a black Ford Mustang. And the voice of Kit was Val Kilmer. The TV.
No.
Yes.
All right.
The rebooted TV show only lasted for about 9 episodes. It was called Kit 2000 or something. Or Knight Rider 2000. Yes. It was a Ford Mustang. And the voice was Val Kilmer, who would say things like, "You need to pull off here. Perhaps it's time you went to the restroom. Walk around the back.
It's just like an early GPS.
Yeah. Don't forget to pick up some peanuts before you get back in the car." There was a rebooted Knight Rider, a black Ford Mustang. The voice was Val Kilmer. You don't believe me? By the next show, we'll have researched this. I will have won something.
Well, by next show, will you have checked who Abe Vigoda is and figure that one out?
So no, talked about still him angry in the Barney Miller context from the last show.
Says he's a Godfather fan and doesn't know who he is. Anyway, so next show, right?
I think you got to press play.
Let's do that.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military
court. Has a voiceover explaining things.
These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Change here. Like, see, all these things, they have a change halfway through, like the other version.
This is, of course, the A-Team. One of the greatest TV shows of all time. Love the A-Team. Howlin' Mad Murdoch, B.A., Face Man, and Colonel Smith. I love it when the plan comes together.
B.A. being Mr. T, of course, if anybody does.
One of the greatest TV shows of all, one of the greatest action TV shows of all time. Before we discuss that, the theme tune... Done again by Mr. Mike Post. It's a march. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. And it makes sense because it's a military unit.
Uh-huh.
Military units march.
Military units. Over the course of the seasons, they reabsorbed them back into the military.
When people hit the beach at D-Day, they came out marching. They didn't come out to a waltz. 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, that is.
Do you realize on D-Day they didn't march at all?
In general,
I mean, I guess they marched a parade afterwards, but that's not really the
okay.
Way that
when
they
you're training, when you're training at Paris Island,
pointless,
and you're singing, you're singing to a march beat.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and that's what that song is, a pure march.
I thought they didn't like Stripes. There she was, just a walking down the street, singing do what.
That's a march. That's why it's 4-4 time.
You've seen Stripes, haven't you?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's from that.
So anyway, that's the A-Team, one of the greatest TV shows ever.
Forget
how I feel about the show. I love that theme tune. It does have a voiceover, but the voiceover... sets up the premise of the show. I know if you've listened to part one, there was a lot of back and forth between my partner and I, not between us, in terms of voiceovers and what they were being used for. to me, the voiceover is all part of a crack military unit.
Yep. Something like that. So
wanted by the
you
government.
Mentioned it being action-packed. I guess by action-packed, you mean lots of cars going over two-wheel yes. ramps. You know, right in the credits there, they had them.
Car like flip.
Car hits a bush. The Jeep, of course, hits a bush. There's an explosion, and it somehow flips over. Like, it's the two-wheeled ramp thing, and this is like the most popular usage of two-wheeled ramps where they flip cars over on their side because, explosion, it flipped it over.
If you're driving around in L.A., you really need to watch where you're going.
That's right. There's going to be a two-wheeled ramp somewhere that's going to throw you over onto your side.
I do remember.
It was, everybody knew it was bad even when they were watching it. It's almost like camp, you know.
But I will say this though, when it first came out, I remember when it first came out in the UK, there was a lot of talk about how unnecessarily violent it was. And even though it was comic book violence, and again, it's hard when you talk about these things to sort of place yourself back into the mindset of the time. But having guys jump out of a van just spraying the street with machine gun fire, even though no one gets, even though you don't see anyone killed and there's not like, you know, showers of blood anywhere like a Die Hard movie, it's still quite violent.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, there was a lot of gun-toting action.
Can you imagine, like, if a show came out like that now, we wouldn't be worried about it being violent. People would say, oh, it's so goofy,
about it being moronic.
It's so, like, comic, you know, kind of thing.
There are another show where they were kind of outlaws, and then they ended up working for the government.
That's where they came back. Yeah, like, they got reabsorbed into it. So,
Ratings go down, you actually try and get a job in the government as a way of trying to boost your TV ratings.
One thing is notable, I think, about these, other than history boosts, but like the Magnum P.I., Simon & Simon, Knight Rider, A-Team, we have not, I think as we talk a little bit of Magnum P.I., about the song. Because at the end of the day, these might be interesting TV credits, but they got nothing as songs. Like, compared to what we talked about from the 70s, none of these would we end up listening to on our playlist.
I don't know. I know that ultimately we are going to try and pick what we think are the best.
Right.
I don't think A-Team is going to be in there. But you know something? I can hum it.
Simon & Simon is the closest thing to a song.
Simon & Simon is the closest to a standard melody tune. But that A-Team theme tune, you can bang that out. It's straightforward. It's loud. It introduces the show as a TV theme tune. Not as a TV theme tune masquerading as a song. Obviously, Hill Street Blues is a better song. You can listen to Hill Street Blues as a piece of music. I'm not suggesting you can do that for the A-Team, but I think it's a great TV theme.
Right.
I like it a lot. I like how it goes.
A-Team on from 83 to 7. The next show we're going to talk about here also started in 1983. And I think the reason I kind of played up that song album, because here now we're going to have a shift where, in fact, the theme is not only a good TV theme, but actually a kind of a song. Think as many people are going to recognize right at the gate, but
that's a great tune, though.
The Equalizer.
I'm telling you that right now. I love that. The Equalizer, a TV show starring Edward Woodward, but we'll come back to the TV show because this is a theme that has a lot of interesting things about it.
Right. Well, yeah, not only as a TV intro thing, but so first of all, the music. I mean, one of the reasons it's a real song is because it's done by Stuart Copeland.
A real musician.
The drummer from Police. Yeah, exactly. Well, not the other people aren't real musicians, but they're TV theme songs.
He's more of a musician than Sting.
That's right.
Sting just plays all that nonsense now. Sting has become the Paul McCartney of this generation. Yeah,
apparently in the early days of the Police, Stuart Copeland was writing music and then more of the music, and then Sting sort of started doing more and more.
When the Police became kind of crap.
The Police never
Sting was
became
doing
crap.
It.
I mean, because they didn't last long enough to become crap.
I mean, there's a big difference
between... The last album is Synchronicity, which was
in and of itself
a great album. No, it's not.
Horrible.
Oh, it's...
Regatta de Blanc is one of the great great albums of all time. And I think Stuart Copeland actually does vocals on one song. It's Okay on Any Other Day is actually Stuart Copeland.
Yep.
Great album. Synchronicity, it's more like all the other rubbish that Sting does with, you know, different cultural singers and stuff.
Right. But taking so, a shot. So at this point, he's Stuart Copeland is he does this. He did the soundtrack to
Wall Street.
Wall Street,
yeah.
And he's using these sort of electronic things in a percussive way. I mean, you can tell that music there. It's not just drums. There is a lot of drums in it, but like even the music is sort of percussive. I forgot what I was going to say about him. So he ends up doing these things. He also things about him and his family is kind of funny. You know, he's in the band The Police, and his dad was a CIA guy came from around this area, or at least ended up in this area. His brother founded IRS Records, the record label.
Yeah,
and
big 80s Miles record Copeland. Label.
And, you know, all these things like related. I think I read once that like they didn't find out that their dad was in the CIA until after a lot of these things happened. So it was a weird coincidence that they had all these law enforcement motifs.
Frankly, if they'd found out beforehand, it would have said that their dad really wasn't much of a CIA operative.
Yeah, if you can't keep it secret from your kids, who can you keep it secret from?
I love that theme tune.
Yeah.
The show is a regular sort of vigilante type.
Right, got remade into a movie just last year with Denzel Washington, which really the movie itself
seems a bit strange
doesn't feel anything like the TV show. But
the original Equalizer was played by a basically in his late 60s English actor called Edward Woodward. If you grew up in England, Edward Woodward became his most famous role back in England was on this very sort of, I know we've used this word so much, but a very gritty spy show called Callan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an early 70s English. It was one of our Saturday night dramas. But it was, if you think of James Bond as the most extreme spy spectrum, Callan was more like sort of a Tinker Tailor type spy.
Right. And he looks the part. I mean, he just looks he's great. I mean, he's great haired. He's not particularly physically fit. I mean, he looks fine, but
But it was interesting but he's sort of this vigilante. And if you watch the opening credits, there's a lot of black and white. It's very sort of shots of.
Yeah, I mean, the credits are really interesting because it's none of the characters. It's all these little shots about, like, people under stress, like somebody who's in elevators.
Someone being intimidated.
Yeah. Somebody who's getting onto a subway with all the graffiti all over it.
And
the plot was, I mean, it's a perfect for a TV show, is that a new person would present themselves needing help. And he was the equalizer, and he'd go out and help them and the like.
But the credits do have very much a Death Wish vibe. Remember that movie from the 70s?
The TV
version of the Charles Bronson vigilante movie.
But I would recommend like watching this. I think it'd be an interest, like if you don't know anything about the Equalizer, you're just interested in TV things, to watch these credits, because it is a different thing.
There's, I want to say this. It's interesting we say that. There is, and I know you're now going to roll your eyes when I say this. There is sort of a dark Batman vibe to it. Yeah. And what I mean by that is Batman is sort of this urban vigilante. And even now there's a TV series called Gotham, which is sort of about Gotham City, where the city is a dark, foreboding place that seems it's sort of crumbling away.
That's what Gotham is, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Equalizer seemed to cash in on that sense of, you know, unlike Simon and Simon or Magnum. Magnum, in a weird way, it's in Hawaii, it's sunny, it's beaches. Yeah, it's some wife's had her jewelry stolen, or do you know what I mean? It's a much more jaunty type of show. But there was something for TV relatively dark about the Equalizer. Do you know what I mean? It's just sense of, and I need this guy to help me because the system has forgotten about me type thing. And so, yeah, there was.
So I was on from 83 to 87. I mean, it's funny because I was.
Great theme tune.
That plays well into what I was going to talk about, which. We talked a little bit about the different shows, and, you know, we started with Dragnet, or at least chronologically, we started with Dragnet. We really started with Mission Impossible in the last episode. You should listen to that. But those were – it was a very sort of law and order thing. And then you get into the 70s, and you got a lot of these individual law officer
rogue.
Who's like rogue, you know, who's like taking care of you by protecting you, protecting against the rot and decay. We get into the 80s and we're dealing with two sets of private investigators. Knight Rider is this, like, you know, its own little
vigilante
and something. But it's outside of the auspices of government.
Although saying that, with GPS, my car talks to me now.
The A-Team, you know, they were wrongly convicted of a crime.
A crime they didn't commit.
Group. Now we have the Equalizer.
If you can hire them, you can find it. If you can find them,
it's
you can hire
them. It's basically like, by the 80s, we've given up on the institutions helping you, even with the gritty folks. And instead, we're relying on the separate private system, so to speak, for taking care of all that stuff. But then, you know, the 80s, people start developing more confidence in their institutions, rightly or wrongly, but they start trusting, you know, the people to run the government better. You know, we're coming out and coming into a different sort of era. And the next show, we now are going to start going, it's a different version. It's not certainly not Dragnet, but here's something else. Right off the bat, you can tell that's a better song because we actually played it the whole way through instead of talking over the top of it. We're talking about Miami Vice here, of course. I mean, I don't know how many could not know that was Miami Vice theme, but...
I have a cool question for you.
Did 84 Miami, to 89.
So Equalizer came out first, right?
Yep.
See, it's interesting because I never saw the Equalizer. Miami Vice was a big show in England when it came out. I think it came out... It was one of those shows that it played in America. They immediately sold it around the world. So we were getting Miami Vice around the same time they were getting it. As it was coming out in America. Mm-hmm. I remember I didn't see the Equalizer till I came to America. So in my mind, I always thought that the Equalizer was second to Miami Vice. And so to bring it to the music real quickly, I always felt that I always believed that the Equalizer theme was sort of a wannabe Miami Vice. Because that Miami Vice theme, it's kind of synthy drums. Mm-hmm. I always thought the Equalizer was a ripoff of that. But as it happens... It's the other way around.
Well, I don't know if they were paying attention to each other, but at least you know, Stuart Copeland wasn't ripping off
somebody. I think of them as two halves of a pair. They're so similar, and they are very different from AT, Magnum Force, Simon & Simon. I think of them as sort of having their own corner in the room, yep. The Equalizer and Miami Vice.
Yeah, so this music is done by Jan Hammer, who I don't really know enough much about, but he's clearly not just a TV guy. I mean, my guess is he's a regular musician, kind of like Stuart Copeland, but it's not like we have a whole bunch of Jan Hammer albums on our shelves like The Police. The show was picked up, or, you know, legend has it that Brandon Tartikoff, the guy who ran NBC, right?
Yeah.
Picked it up and he wrote on a napkin MTV Cops because it was supposed to be like a rock and roll cop show, so to speak. And it wasn't a musical like Cop Rock, which was Stephen Bochco later on, but
it's interesting you say that.
Certainly feature music in ways that were different.
And I have no doubt that that's what occurred. But in a strange way, when you watch the opening credits, I can also imagine someone sitting around going, let's make a new Hawaii Five-O. And what I mean by that is it's a cop show set somewhere.
Yeah.
When you watch the credits to Miami Vice, it's nothing but images of Miami, like flamingos, yep,
stars, and also like the Equalizer. Actually, it's funny to think about that in a counterpoint to Equalizer because they both are like, there's none of the actors, it's just cuts of like the scenes there.
Yeah.
But the Equalizer scenes are all these deep and dark things. In Miami Vice, it's flamingos flying and girls in bikinis and powerboats like flying. There's no crime whatsoever in the intro.
And you're right though, no pictures of, no shots of who's in it, just their names. Miami Vice does feel like, and I know it's not the theme music, Miami Vice seemed to be, in my mind, I always think of it as one of the first TV shows to heavily integrate popular music into the show. I know that they were famous for their use of Phil Collins's
In the Air Tonight. There's like a very long scene where they're just driving in the car and, you know.
And that was a new thing.
I was
going
to sing it, but I don't think I could sing it.
No, please don't. Please don't. Although, frankly, I don't know if you could sing any worse than Phil Collins.
There's a couple of Glenn Frey songs, You Belong to the City, again, tying to Eagles again, I guess, and Smuggler's Blues. And I think Glenn Frey actually appeared as an actor in quite a few episodes.
You know who else did? Sheena Easton.
That's true.
Sheena Easton was on. And I think she was on as a singer.
Yeah. So that,
the morning train.
They were tying into the music thing. I wonder if that would...
But that didn't happen.
I don't think that would work anymore because, I mean, this was like the musicians were emerging into MTV land and videos and we saw them and so they became a different kind of star. But I can't picture a show now.
No, you make a very good point what you say, though.
I mean, but Glee and things like that, I guess they feature a lot of these musicians, but not in like a... No, can you imagine like a cop show that now had like various musicians appearing?
No, but let me say this.
Somebody from Arcade Fire appears on Law and Order.
Yeah, but back in the 60s and 70s, the rock star who was also an actor was quite a unique place. Mick Jagger was in some films, you know, that type of thing. Now, and I'm going to throw a name at you, Justin Timberlake is a singer and an actor. Now, J-Lo, singer and actor. Now,
Two of them could appear, but I don't think the TV shows would be below them now.
No, but what I mean is I think the 80s was a time when the two different roles sort of merged into...
Right, because music was on video.
You're right. But what I'm saying is Miami Vice heavily featured songs of the day. And that didn't happen before that, but now it happens all the time. I mean, there are plenty of shows now where, oh, we're sticking in a song, we're sticking in music. But I do think that was the time when, you know, the line between music star and film star started to blur. And now what I'm saying is we just have entertainers who may happen to specialize. Whereas back before that, so-and-so was a rock singer. That's what you did. If you were in a movie, it was almost stunt casting. But now, it's not so much stunt costume.
Well, except for the fact that, like, I mean, I guess what I would say is those people that you're mentioning aren't really rock. They aren't really, I mean, they're sort of musicians, yeah. You know, they're just.
I mean, look, let's face it. Bruce Willis made an album.
That's right.
Yeah. Bruno? Yeah. I think of Bruno.
A couple other quick items on Miami Vice. Michael Mann, of course, is the producer, director. I don't know what you would say about it. But
Did
Heat and Collateral. You know, he has a certain style to the way he does these.
The Insider. He's always used his music very well in his films.
Yeah, plus just the style of the show. I mean, it was a huge show in terms of cultural influence. You know, it's everybody started wearing their jackets and pastels and no socks.
Every time when I roll up my sleeves of my jacket, I think, ooh, I look like Don Johnson.
Right.
Every time I don't shave, I think, ooh, I look like Don Johnson.
Yep. So I think that's kind of it for Miami Vice. It's funny that it's so polished because there was legitimate, like probably much deeper crime going on in Miami at that era than there was in like any cities. Because you really, if you ever seen Cocaine Cowboys, the documentary all about like how literally the cocaine trade,
but didn't the TV
involve people buying whole buildings and stuff with their money?
TV show sort of flirt in its very sort of pasteurized, sterile, for want of a better phrase, TV way. You know, they sort of had that, you know, that it wasn't like they were just solving, you know, there was a sense like, yeah, it's Miami, yes, drug runners, yes, speedboats. And I know it wasn't, you know, it wasn't hard or harsh in the way that modern TV dramas are, but they, you know, they were definitely sort of paying lip service to the fact that Miami was sort of a...
Know, there's a bleeding of the edge between the law enforcement and the lawbreakers. But then on our next little show, we're going to talk about, like, you know, mentioning that the governmental authorities are sort of taking back over, and we're going to have that happen fully with the next show. This is Law and Order, of course, which, I mean, I just think about, like, so we didn't even really ultimately talk about the song in and of itself, Miami Vice, because it is a song. Like, I mean, like, we don't have to, like, be like, justify it. Everybody knows it's a song. The Law and Order theme is not a song at all. I mean, nobody's ever possibly listening to that in and of itself.
No.
But it's a very good TV intro and theme, and it's
when you hear
sort of
it,
beat feels like the beats of the show.
And again, the trouble when you do these shows and you start reviewing this stuff is you do sort of get into this chicken and an egg situation. And I can't decide if I remember if it's a great theme because it exemplifies the show, but also is it a theme because that show's run for like 20 years? There are like four other versions of it. It's hard to get away from it as a riff.
Right.
But at that moment, if that's the case, then as a TV theme, it's worked.
Oh, yeah.
Because before anything else, a TV theme is a... it's almost the jingle. It's an identifier of the show. It doesn't necessarily have to be a great piece of music. You are correct. I wouldn't sit here and say, oh, Law and Order is a great piece of music. But you know something? When I hear that, I'm thinking...
It's getting the job done, that's for sure.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
So, you know, the I always thought Law and Order is kind of funny. And by the way, you mentioned 20 years. That's exactly right. 1990 to 2010. Oh, yeah. It, of course, begat a franchise, which then, you know, there's other Law and Orders on now, but the original SUV, one did the 20 years.
Law and Order Criminal Intent.
Sports utility vehicle.
Yeah.
SVU, I believe.
There are Law and Order versions in like six other countries. Yeah. There's a British Law and Order.
So the
I think there's a German,
but
law
the show
order,
I always thought
Danish
had a,
law and order.
It was very unrealistic in the way the people had dialogues. It was almost dragnetty in the way that people talk. They talk back and forth so quickly that it's not a conversation you would normally have.
No, but that's
when you're
what
talking
it was,
to your partner. There's no like ums and ohs. It's all this quick, which is like dragnet. Like, well, just the facts back and forth. What are you doing? Don't do that. You know, very quick, and that fits with the music.
But that's its TV show too.
Yeah,
it is a dragnet for another generation.
Set in New York City was one of the main, it's always, this and a number of the other shows that are similar to it have always been great employers of, not out of work, but only slightly working actors.
Yeah.
Folks who work in the theater, you know, whenever you go to plays a lot of the times and you see like, you know, if it's assuming it's not a big star, you look at their little bios in the program and they almost always have appeared in a Law and Order. Yeah. Like, as, you know, victim or as, you know, a random criminal or something like that. This is another Brandon Tartikoff item. It ended up on NBC after Fox and CBS each passed on it.
Really?
I can only imagine like how they feel in retrospect. I mean, like the show itself ran for 20 years in part because they just rolled over the cast. You know, you just changed who these actors were. I don't know. I don't think anybody carried the whole way through. The guy who played Adam Schiff, the elected district attorney, carried most of the show, but not the whole time through. Because ultimately,
no, but there were a couple of others. Fred Dalton Thompson was one.
Yeah, Fred Dalton Thompson.
Yeah, Russians don't take Thompson. A dump without
middle
a plan.
It's
Fred
name.
Dalton Thompson.
I don't know his middle name.
If you look at his IMDb bio, he's Fred Dalton Thompson.
Yeah, so there must be one of those things.
In Die Hard 2, he's Fred Dalton Thompson.
Well, that's because like the actors all have to have a different name or something like that. This is another Mike Post tune, which, you know, if we haven't sort of keep mentioning, but now he's done this, Magnum, Hill Street, Rockford Files, NYPD Blue, which we're not really going to talk about, but A-Team, all these
yeah.
shows. I mean, so he's all over the place. Anything else about him?
I've got to say something.
I mean, the most famous musical thing of the show isn't really the theme.
It's not the theme. It's the
dun-dun.
Yeah.
You know, like they use for each scene change.
Well, again, you use the word dragnetty, but mm-hmm. it is so dragnetty, you can go dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, well, the theme.
And that's the point.
I got sidetracked.
It's a jingle,
but in addition to, like, it audibly be, like the show itself being a little bit like harkening back to Dragnet, the music at the beginning, it's like a modernized version. It's obviously using synthesized, but it's very dum-dum-dum.
I know it is a much younger show than some of the others, but I'm going to say this about Law and Order: it's aged better than some of the other shows because it didn't get it, yeah. because it was a police procedural, so you can watch it now and you're not going, oh, this was a 1989 episode. Sure, it looks a bit grainier, the actors look different, but in theory the show plays now as it played then. Whereas if you look at Miami Vice,
other than the absence of cell phones at the beginning of the series,
no, well, but you know, if you watch some of those other shows from the 80s, late 80s, they look like late 80s TV shows. Whereas there is something very sort of white collar business like about Law and Order, where it plays now. You can watch an old Law and Order and it doesn't feel like it's 30 years ago and the world is a different place. Do you know what I mean? There's something
about
it.
I guess the other thing notable is a lot more lawyers in this, right? Like,
sure.
Usually it's a police and stuff like that, and lawyers are the, you know, but now half of the show each law, it's the order part. Although it never really made sense to me how Law and Order, those two things went together. But next show did not quite have the same
one.
This
was one of my selections.
Yes. Which I'm going to let you carry because I don't ever even remember it coming out.
That's the theme tune to New York Undercover, a mm-hmm. Fox show, notable because Fox wanted to make a cop show featuring younger actors to get away from the very much white guy stereotype. So mm-hmm. there's an African-American guy, there's a Hispanic guy, the lead.
In case you can get, that's what passes for a – we ran from 94 to 98. That was passes for a hip-hop version
of a TV
theme song, which is
– interesting thing about the show, and it's not a great show. It's just a cop show, but that's a very cool sort of funky urban radio station sound. This show was also created and in its original episodes, it was also a Dick Wolf show. Dick Wolf, the guy who did Law and Order. So there's a TV guy who's done two entirely different atmospheric shows.
Know, at the point where the woodwinds kick in on that hip-hop song, that it does feel a little Dick Wolf, sort of Law and Order.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But I just like it. It's kind of funky.
Because, you know, there's a lot of rap bands that are using the woodwinds in their instrumentation.
Yes, well, Flavor Flav.
The other interesting thing musically about this show, and I don't know this from ever seeing it, only about reading about it, was that I guess there was a club, like a nightclub, that they would go to almost every episode.
It was like the diner in Happy Days.
Like a mid.
What was the name of the diner in Happy Days? Was that Al's? It's like same
Arnold's.
Arnold's, yeah.
Yeah, it's Arnold's, yeah. they would go to it at some point during each episode, and like some mid-level R&B or hip-hop type of person would do a song. But I think they wouldn't say like that's the famous person. They just all – it was an opportunity to mix a song in
just like a Miami Vice, yeah.
Which I'm sure was a cross-promotional effort.
They actually released a New York undercover album with all those songs on it. The trouble was you couldn't actually get a version of the theme tune, which is the theme tune I actually like quite a lot. It's not one of the greatest, but I like it. I couldn't find out who did that. Couldn't find out the composer.
Yeah.
Looked around. It wasn't, I don't know, Paula Abdul or someone like that.
Maybe you better investigate that further, because there might be a scandal behind that or something.
Oh, really?
Like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, could be anyway. Next, so that was, now we're going to go to a sort of a different show, also started in 93. Again, not really necessarily a song exactly, but it's the X-Files. Anybody who watched the X-Files is going to know that immediately. Yeah. Anybody who didn't probably has no idea what that was.
I think it's Cobblers myself, but
93
it's just noise, isn't it?
Well, it's just noise. It conveys the ethereal, mysterious tone that X-Files had.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, look, if I'm an alien and I'm flying across the universe in my UFO to come to Earth to be on the X-Files, if I can build that spaceship, I'd like to think I can play better music than that.
Well,
I mean,
haven't we decided in another episode that we're all aliens?
Yeah, there's not a lot. I don't think there's a lot to it, but I will give it its due. It accurately reflects the sort of show.
Again, it's not a song. Like, you've been touting a number of them that were sort of evocative of the show.
Yeah,
the show. Probably didn't take a lot of effort. That's a fair point. Some interesting things about X-Files. They're actually talking about coming out with new episodes now. Like, literally, the same actors coming back and not...
But not a reboot?
No.
Remake?
It'd be as if, they've been doing something else for 20 years. Has it been 20 years? No,
it's
not quite. It's about 15 years.
Isn't it? Yeah.
They've been doing something else for 15 years, and they're still, I guess they haven't moved on from their jobs, and they're going to be coming back. And
it was one of Fox's original big drama hits.
Yeah.
I think it came out quite early in Fox's run when Fox came on the scene, and they had a lot of sort of comedy shows. They had 21 Jump Street, but The X-Files was sort of an early... This is one of our drama shows.
It was
very successful.
It had some episodes that were just goofy one-offs, and then it had the core of the central theme of the conspiracy out there. I guess in some ways you can look at this as, people turning against the government. Now, after we sort of embraced it on how it's going to fix it, there's certainly a large skepticism of government, and this is the version. They're all lying to us.
He was sort of like a hippie FBI man. I don't mean hippie and hippie sense.
Yeah.
I meant was he worked for the feds, but he wasn't a square-jawed type.
Didn't they originally give him the job because it was sort of like to push him away.
Yeah.
And originally Gillian Anderson was the skeptic who was supposed to him in line, and eventually she becomes convinced.
She has a she's
might
actually
have been
British
the alien and
she's actually British in real life. She talks British when you see her.
British.
Yeah.
I've seen her on on Top Gear this
I'm
last
from
year
the X-Files.
Or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Star in a reasonably priced car. Mark Snow, did the music. He also did. He didn't do a lot of these types
of
shows. Smallville, One Tree Hill.
Heart to Heart,
I think he was involved in Heart to Heart.
Oh, really?
And we didn't have that
on our list of things. I also think Mark Snow's done a lot of film music.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So, not much more than that. Then we come back to another show that, well, it's in keeping with one of the shows we've already covered, so I don't really think as a show it brings much in, but as a musical step, it's rather a different situation.
Ooh, we're going to have a lot to say about this.
So if you don't know who that is, you might as well stop.
It's The Who. Being,
yeah, it's The Who.
The Who from the original CSI.
I don't know what year that song came out originally, but
I think Who Are You is like, is it about 74, 75?
Yeah.
It's
not early. It's like not early. 60s stuff, but it's not. It's at least 30 years old now.
Is it sometime? It's sometime, I think, after Tommy. I think it's after Tommy. Yeah, and I think it was like their last monster hit that everyone got into. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And then I think, you know, because I think the Who...
Ever since then, it's been reunion tours.
Yeah. Who Are You from CSI?
CSI, right. So CSI, very much in the mold of Law & Order, both in its longevity, went from 2000, well, to now, right?
Still on now,
2015.
Yeah. Has about six other versions.
Yeah, and there's all these spin-offs with the different cities.
CSI New York, CSI Miami. There's now a CSI Cyber.
Yeah, with Patricia Arquette, which after being nominated for an Oscar,
seems to me like a step backwards. Yeah, the dude from Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
Dawson.
Yeah.
Whatever his name is in real life.
Right.
James something.
He has a big head.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, we mean that physically. We don't mean that, like, he's got a big head.
So I thought, like, just to fit this into my... maybe we should talk about the music and then we'll talk about the show.
I don't think... This works as a theme tune in that, yeah, I know that that's CSI. But in a strange way, I'm not sure that it really counts.
No, I mean, I don't think
there's
we might as well just pick whatever rock songs and throw it up. It's not really a competitor to this. I mean, and the craziest thing is every CSI
has a different Who song.
They grab these Who songs, which I'm going to guess is making the Who a good chunk of change, but
I'm trying to think of what ones the other
it's
ones
branding.
Have.
I mean, yeah, it's connecting them into these things so that you hear this stuff.
I'm trying to think of what the other Who songs they've used. Like, for example, this one, it's Who Are You?
Right.
Yes, okay, this is a crime show following clues.
Yeah.
I think they use Won't Get Fooled Again.
That kind of works.
Okay, I kind of get that. But I'm now trying to think what the other ones are.
Yeah.
And if they keep having spin-offs at some moment, you're just playing Who songs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I get it here. This is a Who song. For the original CSI.
Is there a Kids All Right one?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is it like
CSI?
CSI Kindergarten?
The CSI Jump Street, yeah. The Kids Are All Right, yeah. I mean, that's my point. It's an interesting sort of branding.
I think what's interesting, I mean, jumping away from the music, because I think, you know, sort of cover that. It's a big-time rock song, you know.
But let me tell you what, whose song's already been used by a film. It works perfectly in a film, and in a weird way, it would have worked on the TV show. Have you ever seen the late 90s Steven Soderbergh thriller, The Limey, starring Terrence Stamp? He plays an ex-convict who comes to L.A. trying to find out who killed his kid. A lot of real, like, familiar names in it. It's a classic Steven Soderbergh film, a lot of cross-cutting back and forth. Anyway, I would highly recommend that. But anyway... They use the Who song "The Seeker" as the theme tune, and in a weird way, that'd be kind of a cool TV show one. But unfortunately, it's been taken by the movies.
The other, I thought you were about
basically
to talk
the Who
about
have been
the,
whoring themselves
the Don
out.
The Don Cheadle movie with
Ocean's 11, no, Out of Sight.
No, with the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Which guy from Saturday Night Live?
Adam Sandler.
Don Cheadle and
Rain Army. Army.
Oh, and see, I've never seen that.
No.
Did they use the Who?
Yeah.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah. Or at least in the advertisements they did. Yeah. But what I think is interesting in the show is, you know, like, I keep trying to fit it into the framework of, you know, what society thinks about authorities and how it's protected and the like. And we went from, you know, Dragnet and the police officers who help you out, Mission Impossible, you know, to rogue police officer in the 70s to the folks outside of the system in the 80s. We've come back to the police force. I think at this point with CSI, if you watch it, you know it's all about just figuring out the things where they got the technology. We've abandoned
the system completely.
Well, people at least. We've decided that people can't protect us from everything. We need technology to protect us
Science will set you free.
Exactly.
That's what it's saying. Yeah.
So, it's why they do, like, oh, they live in the, you know, they got all these computers and this chemical analysis, and we're going to find the DNA in 15 minutes and the like. And if you talk to anybody in law enforcement, this show, and to some extent Law and Order, is just horrible for the purposes of proving crimes in America today. Because juries who have seen this stuff are shocked when, like, oh, there's a robbery. Well, where's my scientific evidence that this person really robbed this person? Sure, they're all saying this happened, but where's the hair fiber analysis, and, you know, what was found in the trunk of the car, and, you know, can we track the dollars because their skin cells are left behind on them? You know, just people expect too much out of the system, and it's totally unrealistic.
I have watched the number of high-profile trials on TV, going all the way back to OJ, going back to the Casey Anthony one, and I'm not going to lie, in real life, those guys need to hurry it up, because that stuff takes far too long. When I see this done on CSI, you should be able to bring out a couple of clues and then just get it done. That's my feeling with CSI. It just takes too long in real life. And so it's not just like the smoking gun evidence. It just takes too long. On CSI, in 2 minutes, they can wrap it up and present it to you.
It's because they get a picture and they're like, enhance.
Yeah.
Enhance. Enhance. What was I watching recently? It was some sort of comedic thing where they were like, dehance. So like they're going backwards from enhancing. I don't know if that's a word or not. But so
CSI, as much as those Who songs are classics, they don't get to count as TV songs as well. No, CSI gets eliminated.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. Now, the next show may get eliminated for a different reason, but certainly the music is worthwhile as talking about.
Is this our last one?
It is.
I'm okay. All right.
And of course, the computer systems here are going to act up, so we'll have to talk over it for a second while it doesn't work.
Yeah, we're struggling with the Wi-Fi in the new basement studio.
You can guess what network it is by the beginning. So that, of course, is the theme to The Sopranos from HBO.
A great credit sequence.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, and I know we're going to talk about the music specifically in a moment, the credit, the music works with the images you have on screen. There's all these quick cuts of his journey home, as if you're riding in the car with Tony Soprano, looking at New Jersey and New York behind you.
Paying the toll at the toll booth.
It just works as a minute and 15 seconds of TV setup. And even the way that the words, they slide on and off the screen.
Yeah.
They don't just sort of appear and disappear. They slide on, they slide off. Everything about that minute and 15 seconds is a really well done piece of TV introduction.
Yeah, fair warning to anybody who is going to our YouTube channel to check this out. There's two versions on there. The version we just played, because the audio is better, is actually a remake of them done by some technology group in Dublin that was having a David Chase in for a talk. And so they remade the whole, like a shot-for-shot thing all set in Ireland. And when you look at it, you'll think initially it's it, because it is so close to it. But then you're like, wait a minute.
It's like a YouTube
those signs don't say New Jersey. They say something else.
Like the Who's the Seeker, I searched High and Low on YouTube for the original, and I couldn't find them. I think you ultimately found the original
one, but the audio is not as good, so went ahead and used that one. But for
there were countless, obviously, film students who have done their own version of the Sopranos opening theme, which I guess
to tell you what I mean. First of all, Sopranos as an overall show is so influential,
but it tells you how great that minute and 15 seconds is.
And the music, so the music is done, I think, by a British band, actually.
Yes, called, I was shocked to discover this.
Alabama 3, if
A3,
you're Britain,
for A3, sure.
If you're here. Like, apparently this is one of those issues that when they came to America, probably the people who, the band Alabama, were like, no, you can't do that. So they're A3 when they're here, they're Alabama 3 when they're over in Britain.
I really like the tune.
At a Brixton, where's Brixton?
Brixton's in South London. Brixton, actually home to infamous riots back in the late 80s when I was a kid, the Brixton riots.
I know the Clash at Brixton mentioned it.
There you go. Yeah, tough. So very tough part of London, like old South London neighborhood, traditionally tough.
Song's called Woke Up This Morning, which was just the beginning of it.
Yeah, I was actually quite shocked to find out, oh, they're from Britain. I didn't realize that.
I don't want to count this one in it, because this is not, all the other ones have been at least crime fighting related shows or things against crime, and this is a crime sponsoring show. Like, the whole perspective of it is on the other side.
If you
it
listen,
doesn't really fit in the show
genre. It does. Yeah, right. I'm going to tell you why it does. Because in part one, you were very big on Beretta, a TV show I hadn't watched. We played two versions of that. There was one with Sammy Davis Jr. That guy was a crime show on TV, and he ended up being a criminal in real life. Why is it? Why is it now different that this is a show about criminals on TV? Sopranos counts. Let me tell you the reason why it should not count. I'm not saying this is the reason. We've just been very critical, I think that's a fair phrase, about CSI and its use of Who themes. Now, I don't know if A3 wrote this song for the Sopranos TV show, or if it was a song that the Sopranos made.
I wasn't able to figure that out.
In a strange way, if I was being completely fair and applying the same standard I've applied to CSI and The Who, I should apply it here and eliminate this song. The caveat is, of course, is I don't think anyone had heard that song until it was on the Sopranos. So,
it doesn't really matter which it was at the end of the day.
I mean, it works, though. It's a great credit sequence. I think it's a good song. It's got this...
A real song. I mean, like, that's a thing. Again, it's sort of, like you said, it sort of could be a cheat, like the Who thing. If you wrote it as a song beforehand, you can't have it compete against TV theme songs. But in any event,
I'm going to ask you a question. Hold on, before we get to that. I'm trying to think back now. The Sopranos always ended the show with a song. 9 times out of 10... there was a song played, Miami Vice style somewhere through. But I'm trying to think. I don't think The Sopranos actually had a lot of incidental music.
Definitely didn't have like a soundtrack.
No, that's what I meant.
It was just his regular song.
So but I just find that kind of interesting too.
All right, then.
So there you go. Use of music in TV.
So, which really brings us, that's the end. That's all of the shows that we've covered. So between the first one and the second one, I think it's about 24 shows.
Yeah.
First of all, before we decide who the winner is, they're all winners, right? At some level, they're all winners because they all made it. I mean, we skipped it. There's a lot of crime shows. I don't know how many people can email
in. We did. We mentioned Heart to Heart. I remember in the last show.
Barnaby. We never talked about Barnaby.
Well, but that would have been eliminated because that was a Quinn Martin production.
Yeah.
And if you've listened to part one, you'll know exactly what I'm saying.
Meaning there have been big crime-related shows that we did not cover here because we had to, thin down the crowd a little bit. 2 hours worth of crime theme shows.
We said this in the last show. I'll say it again now. It was amazing how many we uncovered.
If we decide to tackle comedies, it's going to be like a four-parter.
Yeah.
So... what does it leave? What do you got there? I mean, I know...
All right, they're all winners. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me go...
But who's the real winner? Who's the winner of the winners?
Well, let me go on my notes first, and I'm going to throw you a couple of names, because I guess we do have to anoint one.
Sure.
I came into the two-part special with a thing for Mission Impossible, so it stays in there. I still think it's great. It's iconic.
Even though you sort of questioned it there.
I did question it. Yeah. Hawaii Five-O goes on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Million Dollar Man is on the list for me. It's not a great song, but it's a great credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
The A-Team, as much as I love it, I'm going to eliminate that. The Equalizer, I really like that. It's done by a real musician. Mm-hmm. The Equalizer, I know it's not going to come out on top, but I'm going to have it in my final bracket.
Okay.
And then The Sopranos, because it's a great song, but it's also a great 1 minute and 15 of sort of visual, audio-visual entertainment. Right, so those are my finals.
You got Mission Impossible, Hawaii Five-O, $6 Million Man, Equalizer, basically, and Sopranos.
And Sopranos, yeah.
So for me, I think, Hawaii Five-O is sort of undeniable. That's in the list. We got Beretta. I think, Beretta, the Sammy Davis Jr. version. That's a
Let
real...
Let go to Sparrow. Whatever it was. Something to do with
Sparrow.
Man,
now you just screwed me up by saying that. It's not Chase the Sparrow. Follow the Sparrow.
Chase the Sparrow. That's why Sammy Davis Jr.
And Barney Miller. I thought that song was...
You do good. Like Barney.
This is all
you
from the
like
first
that,
half
yeah.
of that. Second half, you can't deny Hill Street Blues' role in all this sort of stuff.
I don't like the song, but I'm going to sit here and acknowledge it as it is a classic. I'm not saying I don't like it, but I'm not saying it's not good. I acknowledge it. It's a classic song.
Yeah.
Tune, rather.
And I can't believe you don't have Miami Vice in your set for the more recent shows. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to like The Equalizer more as a piece of music. I know Miami Vice is arguably the more infamous show.
I want to like Equalizer more because I like Stuart Copeland. I have some of his albums. He did a couple albums. I have the actual album that has the Equalizer on it that has a bunch of other songs.
Oh, wow.
Like,
these are
instrumentals, things, LP. Yeah. Like, do you have a turntable?
No.
It might be trouble for you then.
Oh.
And then he did another thing called Clark Kent. It was all done under a pseudonym. He never had his name on it, but it was sort of like a... post-punk sort of type thing. But people could check that out. For some reason, he also did another thing called Arithmetist that was kind of like the African rhythms type of thing. But
digress. Sort of Sting-ish.
Yeah, for some reason.
Oh, see, they all want to do that.
I can't find that
one. Stick to what you're good at.
No, but it wasn't. There weren't like lyrics and stuff. It was much more like tribal. But anyway.
Let the tribal guys handle their music.
Equalizer's kind of there, but I got to get Miami Vice. No, it's just a better song. Listen, I like Equalizer as a piece of art, but I like Miami Vice as a song.
You know when you do your NCAA bracket and there's a team that you want to have advance in, but at some moment they're going to lose? That's the Equalizer for me. I wanted them to win two or three games. But I know it's not the best.
But listen, you know, what one immediately came to mind for both of us is a Hawaii Five-0. It's got... It's a cool song. I will listen to song. I think I'm going to put it into my rotation of random songs.
You can't deny it's an iconic opening. It's an iconic song. Win out the Atlantic. I think we're ready now. At the end of the show, we're about to announce the Atlantic Voice of Decree.
Winner of what do we call it? TV theme song / crime
version. Actually, colon crime.
colon crime. Colon crime is a bad thing to think about, but colon crime it is
Hawaii 5-0.
So maybe we need to have to wrap up with that.
This has been the Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeth.
No, you got to look at, got to watch the credits here.
Oh, we are okay. I'm still going to say goodbye.
No, well, yeah, I don't think you should say goodbye yet. We got all the shots. We got all our themes here.
Oh, and Steve McGarrett's going to spin around.
That's right.
Oh,
there you go. Spins right around there.
Brilliant.
Starring Jack Lord. Because we have to see Zulu as Kono.
Zulu as Kono.
I mean, that's coming up shortly here.
I tell you, you can play this and tell people to name things that they see, and they can all say things like
this
airport.
Weird fisheye lens.
Yeah, but they'll all say
like
airport. They'll all say girl.
It's
on
just
the
telling
beach.
Us all that we have to
belly dancer
fly to Hawaii.
Yeah,
come on, we got where's
here we go. This is James MacArthur as Danny, not Dano. He's Danny.
He's like a knockoff Steve McQueen. Here's Zulu as Kono. Immediately followed by
Lee Hong as Chin Ho.
Kam Fong as Chin Ho.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.